Welcome to Environmentality, a podcast for current environmental news, lectures, and interviews with the experts. I'm your host, Brendan Anthony. Let's dive on in. All right. Well, today I have Preston Quillen on the podcast, coffee shop owner and roaster, and I'm so delighted. And how about we just dive right into it, my man, and give us a little background on who you are and your beautiful family and what you got going on over there.
Yeah, for sure. First, I want to take time to say thank you to you. Huge opportunity because I know that you know a lot more important people than me in this role. So it's
I don't know about that, my friend.
Come on, man. I know you. You know people. So it's very humbling. It really is. And I hope that I can do it justice in the end. So thank you for having me.
Happy to have you on.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm a Preston. I own a coffee shop, coffee roastery, in Jackson, Alabama, super small town. Have one in Chatham, Alabama, and fixing to have one in Thomasville, Alabama. So we'll have three coffee shops, and then that'll be in August. And so we have a little deal with Amazon that we do. It's not coffee related. I hope to one day, be on Amazon. That'd be cool. We also do some stuff in the community with the church. So we try to be involved and try to give back as much as we can, even though we're super busy. We have two small kids, one two-year-old, almost three, and one two-month-old. And he's just the precious little dude ever. I don't know why, but it's different with the little boy, you know.
So,
but yeah, man, I became interested in coffee actually on a trip to Haiti. And I think it was the year before I met you, because you were in Haiti in 15?
Yeah, I was going to Haiti like every year back then. So, but yeah, I think we met on the 15 trip.
Yeah. So I went in 14, and then I came back in 15, and that's where I met you. So the mission trip was not anything to do with coffee, but of course I got to see it on the mountainsides, and actually saw a woman, roasting it over an open fire. And at the time, I hated coffee. I worked in a chemical plant, and I just drank it to kind of work the 12s, So put a lot of cream and sugar in it and that type of stuff, So, but when I came home from the 14 and 15 trip, I just had like this passion for coffee, and I couldn't even explain it, So I really do think that the passion is God-driven. So I came home and, man, just started doing a ton of research on coffee, and because I felt like I can make a change with coffee. And I saw how it could potentially impact lives around the globe. So that was my long-term goal. And then here we are, 4 or 5 years down the road. Well, 15 to 21. So 6 years down the road, I'm finally starting to see the fruition of some of that passion finally come to light. So it's been a journey. It's the coffee world is like so huge. And I don't think a lot of people truly understand that.
Yeah, it's massive.
So people just go to the grocery store and like grab a Folgers or, whatever it is off their shelf. And like, man, there's so much more to coffee than just having energy. And so I hope that, me and you can kind of hash some of that out in this episode.
Yeah,
so.
No doubt, man. I mean, it has a whole culture associated with it, right? And, I think at every step of the way, you have an opportunity to impact and influence people's lives, as you were mentioning. And love to maybe just stick a little bit back at the beginning of the origin story and maybe just share a little bit about how you came to meet your wife, Edie, and was she passionate about coffee as well? Or she was like, oh, this crazy guy loves coffee. Like, I guess I'll join him. Like, how does that partnership work? And was she also interested in this journey with you?
Well, from a very, I won't say young age, but from, like 21, 22, somewhere in there, I had this real passion to make it on my own, to say. So, and when I say that, I mean like not go the college route. I wanted to be a business owner. I wanted to do something that I created from myself. And so I tried like, and she'll tell you this, she'll still tell you this to the day. Like I tried everything under the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Man, when I came home from the 15 trip, I wanted to do
aquaponics.
Aquaponics, dude. I went to I even went to a class and spent like thousands of dollars. To learn aquaponics because I was 100% sure that that's what I wanted to do. And I did. I really enjoyed it and I loved it. And I love learning new stuff. And I think that's another reason why I love coffee is because there is so much to it. And it's like this never ending learning process. So at first, she thought that, hey, this is just going to be another thing that another hobby that he likes, and it's going to fade away in 6 months or in a year or whatever, you know. And it never went away. It's still there each and every day. And then over time, you know, she finally realized, like, hey, this is something that he's super passionate about. And actually, in August, we're actually hiring her on as a manager of Big B Coffee. So
awesome.
She'll be an employee of Big B, and, you know, it'll literally be family run business. So
I love it, man. That's the dream.
Absolutely. Well,
it's good.
It's a dream.
It's a dream. No, man, getting to work with people you love, working with your family. I mean, it's a joy. It obviously comes with unique situations and potentials for, you know, difficult scenarios. But I think, you know, getting to work and do something you love with the people you love, I mean, that's the greatest gift that life can give you.
It is. It's something that I feel like maybe we take advantage of on a day-to-day basis just because, you know, we're so busy and you kind of lose sight of that. You know, I try to slow down enough sometimes and tell my dad is a 50-50 owner with me in this. And, he's a roaster. I taught him how to roast, and he's done so much for the business. You know, I just, from time to time, I'll tell him, like, man, we're so lucky to get to see each other every day, to come to work with each other every day. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. people would kill for that. You know, as you get up in age, you start realizing what's important, and
yeah, man,
you start missing your family, you know. And of course, we got two babies, so he wants to see them, and we're just super blessed, man. Super, super blessed.
That's good, so. I love it, man. So, you know, you mentioned this all kind of started with this desire to help people, impact people positively. So I'm curious about what your perspective is on that, and like what your philosophy and approach to coffee is, in a way that you are then also translating that to a beneficial impact on people. Is that, you know, on the production side? Is that on the sales side? You know, curating culture in your coffee shops? Is the whole process? So where are you seeing this potential for impact in the coffee industry and the coffee world that you're in?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. Our mission, well, not mission statement, but our motto of Big B Coffee is coffee community change. So, you know, we believe that through coffee, we can create community here, and then we can also create change globally. So I think it starts locally with education and just telling people how you can change lives through coffee. And then it goes globally, because you can't do it on your own, right? So the support of our community allows us to make global impacts on farmers and farmers' families. So we try to invite our community in on that. You know, they're the heroes, not us. We're just kind of a catalyst so that they can do that, you know, so that we can do that together. So that's kind of my philosophy on coffee.
I love that, because I feel like how you were kind of framing this business model is that you guys are like the conduit for inviting your community then to empower farmers in these, you know, impoverished countries, and you're supporting a certain type of coffee culture, coffee system that you feel like is going to be most profitable for the people in those environments, and, you know, producing this, you know, obviously highly desired product. So I love that idea of you guys just kind of being the conduit and them feeling empowered as the hero in that story. I'm curious then, would you want to just share maybe a bit about your approach to developing these relationships with these farmers and how significant that relationship is in the coffee industry?
Yeah, for sure. It's huge. I think about the couple times that we have done, you know, direct trade, and I'll just share, I don't know, a story or two. We did a direct trade deal.
Define direct trade for me though, real quick.
Yeah. So direct trade is usually something that happens, you know, like the one we did in Mexico that I'm fixing to tell you the story about, came from a mission trip. She came back and she was like, hey, I met these coffee farmers and I want to hook you up with them so that you can get some of their beans, right? So we ended up doing that. We talked to the farmers and, you know, FaceTimed them, Skyped them, talked to them, built that relationship, learned about their farm, learned about, you know, their family. And so he emailed me, I don't know, it was a week or two, three, four, I don't know. It was a bit later, after we had bought the coffee, roasted the coffee and all that. But he emailed me and he said, you know, because of your partnership with us, I can send my kids to school. Because at the time they were just working on the farm. That's all that they could do, right? So just hearing stories like that, you know, and we've done, I want to say 4 or 5 direct trade deals. And we did one in Peru, one in Mexico. So it's just really touching. Like, really humbling, you know, to hear people say, because the community supported us, because they bought the beans, you know, we could support the farmers. So that would be direct trade to me is, and sometimes, like I say, it doesn't even happen out of us going to look for them, but, you know, people through missions. And we're talking to one now. I think it's Costa Rica that we're trying to get some direct trade going there. So the girl went on a mission trip again, and she came back. She's like, hey, these are coffee farmers, and they'd love to supply you guys some coffee. So it's not always us just going and looking. It's just a God thing, right? People know that that's what we want to do, and that's what we care about. And so, you know, they come to us. Again, it's all about community. So it's a really cool thing to see happen. And emails like that, they make it worth it, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah, because so, you know, in a typical sense, there's a lot of layers and middlemen between the actual farmer and the actual person selling the coffee. And you've obviously integrated yourself a bit because you're also the roaster, but that could also be another step in this kind of supply chain here. And so by eliminating all those middlemen, you're able to pay a higher price directly to that farmer so that they can then have a higher income to be able to support their family.
Like absolutely. Yeah. I actually did a podcast with one of our importers from South Carolina and asked him that very question. Does direct trade affect pricing that much? You know, at the end of the day, it's a yes and a no. It does. But, you know, we specifically go find importers who want to do that as well. So the certifications of fair trade, that's something that we always look for. And if our importer, you know, doesn't do that, then we're not going to use the importer. It's that simple, you know. So even though we do have some coffees that aren't quotations direct trade, we feel like the farmers are still getting a good pay, a fair pay. And, you know, we can talk to the farmers through the importer. So it is direct trade, but it's not direct trade. So there's a little bit of both going on.
So in your context, so direct trade would be like you communicating directly with the farmer, whereas then you also have another certification or label, which is fair trade, which you're going through an importer that is making sure to have a fair trade label, which is ensuring some sort of fair wages being paid to the farmer. So either context, you're making sure that the bottom line for the producer is going to be a sustainable living and healthier wage for them so that, you know, you can support them, be, you know, better advocate for their livelihood.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Love it. Good, man. So that also brings up another question I wanted to ask you then, which is, you know, are there any other certifications that you are interested in looking for as a sourcer of these beans? I know there's everything from, you know, bird and bee friendly to, you know, all the social side of things, environmental, like CAFE practices, Rainforest Alliance, OOTS. What other certifications are you looking for when you're sourcing your coffee?
Yep, a little bit of all that. So we just bought a decaf that is organic, and it'll be in sometime next week. Of course, the fair trade, and we have, I think, two or three beans that are Rainforest Alliance, and we actually have one that is UTZ certified. So that kind of ties in. I think them and the Rainforest Alliance teamed up, and they're kind of the same thing now. So, yeah. You know, we look for a little bit of all that. Fair trade, of course. Again, it's something that it's an education thing, right? Like if you don't know it, you just don't know. So
sure.
When you go to the grocery store and pick out your coffee, you're not thinking about that. But if you know it and if you educate people, then they can know, you know, and they can want to support people, farmers with these certain certifications. So, I feel like it's our job to do that. Me, my dad, my employees, my wife, all of us, you know, to when somebody comes in and says, hey, I want to buy some coffee from you. It's like, especially in lower Alabama, like not throwing any shade or hate or anything, but, you know, we haven't been educated because we're in a smaller town and we don't even have a Starbucks around here. So we just don't know what we don't know.
That's,
you know,
a good thing though.
Yeah, that is a very good thing. So,
yeah, well, you know, and I'm glad you take that responsibility greatly, because I think it's something that I don't think enough coffee shops do. And so I'm curious, what does that educational transaction look like for you? Do you guys have signs up? Are you guys being forthright when you communicate that? Are you waiting for them to ask and then you have the material? What does that education for you look like and mean to you?
A little bit of both. A little bit of both. Usually they'll ask, you know, tell me a little bit about your coffee. And so that's a great, great way to communicate that. But then again, like posting on social media, which is something we probably don't do the best at because we're so busy, and, you know, having flyers and stuff like that in the coffee shop. So a little bit of all of that. And we want to do more of that. So we're actually starting renovations in August to increase our space to have a little bit better seating area. So we hope to do like more cuppings and more tastings and
nice.
A lot more of the education process that we just haven't been able to do because of space limitations. So
that's cool, man. I'm wondering if you could take us on a little journey from the cherry on the tree to a brewed product in your coffee shop. What does this whole process look like, and how many hands is it exchanging? And you can speak generally or about your specific industry or your specific, you know, flow chain that you work through, but just take us through that process and how many steps are involved.
Yeah, for sure. And it's something that I'm really passionate about. One thing I really wanted to talk to you about tonight is doing the farmer's justice. They work super, super hard so that we can enjoy good coffee. I don't think that, you know, a lot of times we see that, we understand that. I did a podcast with a guy in Guatemala, and, you know, he kind of took me, hey, the farmers did this, they do this, they do that, you know, and at the end of it, you're like, just blown away. You're like, all I got to do is roast this thing and then sell it? Like, that's insane. Because they've done so much work, you know. Not only do they grow it, which it takes 3 to 5 years to even harvest coffee after you grow it, you know, but then you got to depulp it and process it, which takes weeks and months. Then you got to bag it. Man, them bags are super, super heavy, 150, 160 pounds per bag, you know. And you're talking about farmers that do this for a living every day, all day. And so it's something that it's really humbling. It's like, man, I get to serve this coffee, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I try to take personally very, very serious because of I want to do that farmer's work justice. You know, if you were to tell him that you buy the coffee and then you burn it, or you don't take it serious, or, I mean, that's his livelihood, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like he would be super sad. Like him and his family would be just devastated, you know? So I think about that a lot, buying coffees from all over the world. I mean, you're talking about elevations, 1,200 feet, 1,300, 1,400, 1,500 feet up, you know. They're carrying these huge things of coffee down the mountain. It's like, man, it's insane. So
it's super insane. I think about that in every agricultural product, you know. And I think, obviously, I work with tree fruit a lot. And, you know, but any agricultural product, there is so much time, effort, science, inputs that are being placed into these products to deliver you a high-quality product that's safe for you to consume, that's at an affordable price. I mean, that's not easy work. And it's always such a shame to see the amount of food waste and just waste of agricultural products all over, man. And something that I'm very passionate about, obviously, because I'm invested on both sides and I mm-hmm. see that world. But, you know, something that makes me sad for us as a general population and how far removed we are from our food system now. And when you are so far removed from that food system, there's such a big apathy that grows. And there's not a strong understanding of value and justice, as you're saying. And so I think it's really on then the retailer side to try and educate and bring some of that connectivity back to the consumers. And it's also on their responsibility as well. I think consumers need to be educating themselves and pursuing this more. And, you know, I think there's better documentaries and podcasts trying to elicit some of this. So it's good. And I think there's never been a better time to educate ourselves about the food system. But at the same time, there's never been a time where we're more segregated from it. And mm-hmm. I think that's a huge problem.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely, man. There's just so much that goes into it, and I'm sure that you can speak, you know, more about it than I can. Like, you went to visit the El Salvador farm, and you get to see a little glimpse of, you know, what they go through. But it's like, man, if you don't have trees, then that impacts the coffee, because coffee is, you know, processed in a certain way. And then if you don't have water, well, they can't process it. And it's mm-hmm. just every little thing moves the needle in a certain way, you know? So it's a balance, and I'm sure that you can, again, speak more to that. But, again, it's something that we don't even think about. We wake up in the morning, we hit the go button, and we have coffee, you know?
It's there.
So it's that sustainability that we need to be educated on. What can we do to make sure that, hey, we have coffee forever, or, you know, that we support these farmers forever? So,
yeah, I feel that, man. So the bean is picked, it's depulped, it's processed, it's loaded into these bags. Where does it go from there?
It usually goes through an importer. I mean, you got the FDA and USDA and all that, you know, it has to be cleared for clearance and brought into the country, because it is a food at the end of the day, right? It's something we consume. So it has to clear regulations. And then from there, you know, the importers warehouse it. They communicate with us, hey, we have this bean that's fair trade or Rainforest Alliance, or, you know, it scored this or it graded this. Can I send mm-hmm. you a sample? And, you know, we'll say, yeah, we would like a sample of this or that. And we sample roast it here for quality assurance, so that, you know, we're not just selling something that's not going to taste good. After that, you know, we'll purchase it. They ship it to us. We get it in, we roast it, and we sell it in bags or sell it in pour overs or French presses or espresso or whatever, you know.
So you mentioned this idea of scoring and grading. Is there a certain threshold on, and this is a Specialty Coffee Association scale, is there a special number that you're looking for what you want to brew and sell in-house?
For me, yes. The scale, I think, is 80 to 90. Anything above 90 is going to be, like, outrageous as far as price goes. So
sure.
Some of these coffee shops like Onyx and Counterculture and, like, massive companies in high-volume areas can do that, you know, but we're in literally, like, a super small town. So we have sure. to be careful of the grade, but also the price. So we want to sell a high grade and still be able to make profit off of it.
Sure.
My sweet spot is usually 86 to 87, sometimes 88, which is, I mean, you're talking about a scale of 80 to 90 and you're at 88. So, I mean, that's pretty high grade stuff. That's where I like to be sometimes for our espresso, because we're in a small town, and usually selling it in, like, lattes or cappuccinos or something, we'll get a little bit lower grade, 84, 85. But for our, you know, slow bar pour overs and stuff like that, it's always 86 to 88.
And that's because the quality of the coffee then is being masked with the milk products. And so the emphasis on that quality of coffee isn't as present there.
Right. Absolutely. For us. Now, if you go to Onyx and, you know, you got these people who expect to have a very flavorful cappuccino that's not having flavoring added to it, syrup, sauces, whatever, you know, then you do need a higher grade espresso. But for us, we're like, I won't say a small Starbucks, you know, but people want the sugary flavor sauces and stuff like sure. that. So we can kind of get away with it, is what I'm saying.
That's good. No, it's interesting. I've never actually thought about that before in terms of, you know, you don't need as much of a quality coffee because you're adding all this other stuff to it. It's like, you know, my dad loves good whiskey, right? And when he has a good bottle of whiskey, he doesn't want people, you know, pouring Coke into it, right? Mixing it. He's like,
or ice.
Mix the Jack with the Coke, not the nice stuff.
That's right.
So it's the same application with coffee. And I think that's a very interesting point that you made.
Yeah. It's owning a small business is like, man, you gotta look at your market and you gotta be able to sell what's going to sell, you know? Cause at the end of the day, man, the whole goal is to be able to provide for my family. So how can I make a living doing this? A little bit of both, right? How can I support farmers, but also how can I make a living for my wife and my kids and all that? So it's a fine balance in a small town, for sure.
Of course, man. And again, you also want to make sure that then you also have profitability on the front side as well for the producers. So you got to balance it all out. And I think it's the blight of every business owner, right? You got to balance it all out, and it makes sense. Whatever makes sense to you is what makes sense and what works.
Insane. Yeah, it's insane, man. We've been up for 3 years, and one of those years was COVID. So,
right.
Something that I think about it often, something that has never happened ever in the history of the world, and I want to start a business, and then it happens. It's like, man, I don't know if I should have started this thing, you know?
It's crazy, man. But then on the back end of it, you can realize, you know, if I endure through that, then I can endure through anything.
Yeah, absolutely. I think about that a lot too.
That's good, man. I bet. So you guys are called Big B Coffee Roasters, right? You're not just a coffee shop. You guys are roasting your own beans. Walk me through this process. Like, how did you even learn to roast, and what is the roasting process?
Yeah, for sure. So very early on, 14, 15, when I started to have this passion for coffee, you know, you always Google like how to make good coffee or something like that. It all came back to you have to roast your own beans to get fresh quality coffee. So I'm like, well, there's just no way, because, you know, there's this massive amount of money that you need to get started, right? And then I just happened to stumble upon a video that says, hey, you can do this in a popcorn popper. $20 at Walmart, right? $10 at Dollar General. So I went and bought a popcorn popper. And no, my wife hates this story. And then I find, you know, a small amount of green beans, a pound or something like that, and I buy them. I'm in a apartment. So, of course, there's, like, people that live above us. There's people that live beside us. It's illegal. It's a very smoky process, so it's not fun for anybody. I just don't know because I've never done it. So I'm inside, and I got my green beans. I got my popcorn popper. I'm super pumped. I'm about to have the best coffee in the world, right? And so we start going. I start roasting it, and I set the fire alarm off, and my wife is like, you're never doing this again. I'm going to divorce you, right? But yeah, just a super smoky process. So I learned to do it outside after that.
But it's a steep learning curve.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you learn that it's really hard to control your temperatures in a popcorn popper.
No doubt.
There's no way to do it, right? So I burnt the first batch. It was not the greatest. It was the worst coffee ever. So, but you know, it started that, it sparked something in me that, man, how can I do this better? How can I perfect this? How can I make this work? And then you just start doing, you know, all this research on how to roast coffee. And gradually over time, you know, a year, 2-3 years, you get to a point where it's like, man, I think I can do this thing, you know? I started selling coffee out of my apartment on a very small roaster, 1-pound roaster. Man, I still have people tell me to this day, like, man, I wish you could duplicate that coffee, you know? Mm-hmm. Not that I can't, but they just loved that specific coffee, you know? Sure. In a 1-pound small roaster, no business license, no nothing, you know? It's just, it was actually a crazy story how it happened. Like, I had roasted coffee, got a good buddy who's a barista up in Nashville, Tennessee, and he's like, hey, man, I want to try your coffee. And I'm like, yeah, man, I'll send you some for sure. He's like, no, I'll pay for it. And it never occurred to me, you know, in the 3 years of this journey, it never occurred to me that, man, I could sell this. You know, I can make a business out of this. And so from him saying, hey, I'll buy this from you, it was like, all right, man, I'm gonna start selling coffee, you know, illegally, but on a small scale.
Bootlegging coffee.
That's right. But no, I would just send it out to friends and family and get their feedback and, you know, hone in that craft. And so it was 2017, I believe, where I finally taught my dad into taking a commercial roasting class up in Minnesota. We flew up for, I think it was 3 or 4 days, and learned how to roast coffee on a commercial roaster, and ended up leaving that trip, buying a coffee roaster and coming home and, you know, getting an LLC and all that. So it was, yeah, 4 or 5 year process from, hey, I want to try to do this, to we're actually going to do it, you know?
And I love that it started with the art of roasting and you wanted to figure that out. And then along the way, you're like, oh, I guess I can monetize this and make this a business. And I think that's so interesting, because I think so often people want to just start with the business plan.
Right.
But you started with the love and the art of the business, and then it all kind of trickled and hashed out along the way. And I think it was probably around 2017 when you sent me some of your first coffee samples. And I remember you shipped them up to me in Washington where I was living at the time, and I loved it. And I would be brewing it for all my classmates in the office, and everybody loved it, man. And it was
crazy,
super fun to watch that I think, process unfold and obviously watch your business continue to grow and develop. And you sent me coffee today and now I'm drinking it now and it's amazing. So I'm super grateful, man. And it's come a long way. I'm sure you can attest to that journey for you, but man, I've always enjoyed it every step of the way. So
yeah, it's crazy to think back, you know, sending that stuff. I was so bold, you know, I just didn't know what I didn't know, you know.
Sure.
I didn't know if it was good, but I wanted to send it out just so I could get your feedback, you know, and it's crazy, yeah. Crazy that you ended up liking it. I remember sending you some super, super light roast.
Man.
Like, didn't even make it to first crack. And I think I sold it to you as like, man, this is going to be like a tea, you know. I don't know if you remember that or not, but I remember that.
Well, no, I was going to just actually bring that up because that was actually one of the things that to me was so intriguing and interesting because I, at that point, wasn't very familiar with the roasting process and didn't really understand that, you know, the darker the roast, the less caffeine and all these things and all the different flavor profiles, et cetera, that you can manipulate through the roasting process. And so at the time, I was such a junkie, and I like to think of myself as a bit of a coffee snob. I've worked as a barista, I've worked in coffee shops. So I feel like I have a educated somewhat palate on what's good and what's not. And so I loved that you kind of gave me these different roasts. And there was that one that was like, it was just like almost like a green bean. And yeah. It was incredible, man. But I'll tell you what, man, I was jumping off the walls doing backflips on that stuff because it was so high in caffeine content. And I had made that especially for my friends. And they were like, oh, this is so interesting. This is so different. Like, I've never had anything like this before.
Yeah.
And it was truly such a unique product. And I loved it a lot.
Yeah. That never made it to market down here. But again, just the uniqueness of coffee. You know, there's so many things that, I mean, so many different ways to brew it. So many different ways to buy it, to grind it, to, you know, everything. It's insane. So it's this learning, huge learning process that it never gets old to me, you know. And I think about that journey you're talking about, like God opened doors. I was a barista back in a church, actually. Again, it wasn't like this. I went searching for it. It was just like, man, it kind of happened, right. You know. And so every step along the way, I just feel like God has opened doors, and here we are, you know, 3 years into the business, and it's doing well, and we're trying to impact lives and trying to create community, and it's just really humbling, man, for sure.
I love it, man. You know, what started as a dream to help people, benefit people, impact them in a beneficial way, and a love for the craft and this art form has now transpired into this business where you can continue to support people through financial incomes, through support of the community. I love it, man. I mean, it's really grown into its own life of its own, and obviously through the guiding hands of your touch, and it's been really fun to watch and super proud, and I love it, man. Stoked for you.
Thank you, dude. It means a lot. I told you when I had you on my podcast, I really do look up to you. You know, I don't know, you're 27, 28, somewhere in there?
28. Becoming an old man.
Oh, man. You just don't know. And, you know, meeting you in Haiti that first time was a real eye-opener. Like, man, I don't have to be old to make a change, you know. Mm. I don't have to have millions of dollars to make a change, or I don't have to, you know what I mean? It's all about helping people any way you can. For me, it just happens to be through coffee, so.
Yeah, man. Well, I love that, man. I always appreciate you're always way too kind and generous with your affirmation. I appreciate it. But yeah, man, I mean, that's been the trajectory of my life as well. And, you know, just wanting to use my passions to help people. And I think that's just been amazing to see, like you said, doors open and just walk through them and see kind of what comes about it. But yeah, you know, like I started Harvest Craft when I was 19. And I mean, I had no idea what I was doing. I had no idea how to run a business.
Insane.
Let alone fundraise. And, you know, so, I mean, you get it. And I love that we both kind of just went for it and you figured it out along the way. And you have, you know, like my father has been really helpful in the nonprofit life as well. And so it's again, cool to get mentorship from your father, business partnership with your father. And I think that's such a joy and a privilege as well, as we kind of started the podcast talking about.
For sure, man. It's special. It's super special. And, you know, I'm proud of you. Just like you said, you were proud of me. I try to tell everybody I can about, you know, Harvest Craft and just this super awesome dude that's doing really cool stuff. So
I appreciate that. I love our bromance. It's always a good
I know, thing. Right? I see again, dude, I see your Instagrams. I'm like, I want to be this guy. I want to be.
You got to come out, man. We got to climb some mountains and swim some lakes together.
Yeah, dude. I would really enjoy to go to El Salvador with you and Tour Mapache, and I just want to ask, you know, like, what'd you learn from that trip about coffee and sustainability and all that, you know?
Yeah, no, it's good, man. So Giancarlo, a dear friend, actually did a podcast with him too. It'll probably, for whoever's listening to this one, probably will have listened to that one before it. And we chatted a little bit about his production, but man, that was one of the greatest experiences of my life, and learning, you know, the whole process from bean to cup, because he's very vertically integrated, and the fact that he has farms, processing facility, a cupping lab, and you could, you know, in one day see the whole process. And, you know, he was scoring coffees 94, 95, like, this is high quality stuff. And it was like incredible. And like, after cupping, you're just like, again, bouncing off the walls, because even though you're like spitting it out or whatever, it's like, it's the caffeine is there and it's so fresh and it's incredible. And I learned a lot just about everything from, you know, the woes of a farmer trying to get this product to market, especially an international market, being ripped off, not understanding what your quality is, settling for a lower price. And, you know, he's been really smart and wise about vertically integrating and getting the understanding of cupping and scoring. So he knows exactly what it is that he's selling. Mm-hmm. And so he knows the price points that he should be hitting. And in that way, he's able to be much more profitable. So, I mean, this guy's a stud. I love Giancarlo. I texted him today a picture of the bag that you sent me, because it said Mapache on it. And, and he was like, you like stoked, dude. Like, I'm going to go surf. Let me know how the coffee is. So, I mean, it's a great life down there. And I've always been super grateful to visit and be friends with that family. And but yeah, man, I'd love to bring you down. I've spoken with him about you a lot, and I think that'd be a really fun trip.
That's too cool. If he listens to this podcast, you know, I just want to tell him, like, that El Salvador is probably, I would say, our top seller in Jackson, Alabama. Cool. So it's something that, you know, me and Dad will wake up and literally, like, that's our routine, man. Like, we got to have that El Salvador. So really, really cool.
That's great, man. I love it. El Salvador was a place that I fell in love with coffee, because I went there on a missions trip in college. And at that point, same thing, man, a lot of sugar, a lot of cream. Like, I was, you know, like the Frappuccinos at Starbucks. And that was the first place where I had just like black coffee.
Yeah.
Just pure black coffee. And, you know, the first day, hated it. By the end of the, like, the second week, I was like guzzling it down. And that's where I fell in love with coffee and was exposed to like good quality coffee. So that will always hold a special place in my heart for sure.
Heck yeah. Yeah, I've actually, man, I got to cut back. That's why I bought this decaf. It's like, you know, working in a coffee environment, dude, it's just available 24/7.
Oh, it's dangerous, man.
Yeah, it's dangerous. Like, you'll wake up and have two or three cups, and then after you eat lunch, you'll have a cup, and then you'll go home and have a cup. It's like, man,
yeah,
I can't sleep. I can't, you know. So
yeah.
I think one more thing I wanted to touch on, and just the sustainability of coffee and why it's so important. When I was talking to, I want to say, as my Guatemalan importer, you know, I was asking him, you know, how does climate change and stuff like that affect the farmers? And he said, just in the past, like, I think it was 2, 3, 4 years, they're having to plant coffees higher up in higher elevation mm-hmm. to get the same taste because of the climate change. So mm-hmm. again, it's just stuff that we don't think about, you know. We're not sustainable mind led. And so it makes the farmer's life a lot harder to have to go up further into the mountain just to get the coffee down. It's actually super dangerous, you know. So it was very eye-opening to hear him say that. And I'm just lucky that I get to talk to people like that so that I can be aware of it, you know. And so, man, if you're listening, just try to take something from me or Brendan and implement it in your life in some small way, you know. So,
well, you know, and really the alarming thing about what you just said is that there's only so much mountain, right?
Absolutely.
If it keeps getting warmer and warmer, it's only so much you can do. And yeah, and as you go steeper up on these, you know, mountains, the soil isn't as good. There's more problems with erosion. Mm. Typically, you can get more moisture, but then that comes with the potential impact of increased incidence of coffee leaf rust. So, you know, there's a lot of issues that can come with that. And and as a farmer, like, these are permanent trees, right? These are perennial systems. You can't just pick them up and move them. It's hard to do. So as you mentioned, it, you know, it's something to think about. You know, climate change is impacting a lot of our food systems, and coffee is, you know, has no immunity to that.
Right.
And so that kind of, you know, as you're mentioning, just kind of this concluding thought and something that I wanted to ask you about is if you could tell your consumers one thing, if you could tell people who are drinking coffee on a daily basis one thing, you know, what would that be? Like, would it be to look out for certain certifications? Would it be to try and support direct or fair trade? Like, what's that one sage piece of wisdom you could give to someone if they wanted to contribute to the sustainability of coffee?
Yeah, I would say, you know, definitely talk to your roaster, whether that's local or, heck, man, shoot somebody an email if you're buying online, you know, and just ask them, you know, what do you guys care about? What kind of certifications are you guys serving? And then just do some research, you know, on your own, like in your free time. Look at YouTube videos, read articles about, you know, sustainability in coffee. And just, I don't know, it's my passion to support people in third world countries. And, you know, I would hope that it would be other people's passions as well, because we have such a good life here in the United States, you know. So, yeah, just do some research. Be aware of the things that are happening, not only in the coffee world, but in the world in general, as far as sustainability goes, and talk to your roaster. See what they offer, see what certifications they offer, and just see what they care about in general, you know, see where their heart's at. So,
cool, man. Straight from the roaster's mouth. I love it. And then how can people support you?
Yeah, man. We have a online shop, bigbcoffee.com. We're on Instagram and Facebook, Big B Coffee or Big B Coffee Roasters, I think. So the online shop. And then if you're ever going to the beach, man, come stop in and see us. We'd love to talk to you and have that conversation with you and get to know you a little bit. So online shop, social media, or even in person, man, that'd be even better.
I love it. And you can get whole beans. And I saw you even got some K-cups for our Keurig friends.
We do have K-cups. Yep. It's pretty cool. I never thought that I would be making our own K-cups, you know, so, but whole bean, we can grind it however you want. So if you got a Chemex or if you got a French press or AeroPress or espresso machine, we can grind it, you know, to your liking. Yeah. K-cups, sample bags, all kinds of stuff, man.
And that's bigbcoffee.com.
Yes, sir.
All right. Check it out, guys. Support Preston and Edie and their beautiful family business. Thanks so much, Preston, for joining me and sharing a little bit about your world and how you came to be in this beautiful coffee experience that you've been pursuing and this amazing business that just continues to thrive. So appreciate your time.
Appreciate you. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I hope I did it justice. You know, I'm sure the El Salvador Giancarlo is way more knowledgeable than me. So I just,
no way, man. I mean, you got your own perspective, so I appreciate you sharing it.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks, brother.